Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Yeah, something that wasn't always there at the start of the year. The Cubs defense looking a lot crisper as of late. Part of the reason they have a three-game lead in the National League Central. That's what we're talking about. Nick Schupkowski here, Mark Grody in Denver, getting ready for Bears and Broncos, covering those practices all week long, leading up to Bears and Broncos on Saturday night, preseason game number 3. But a baseball break for us as we continue some of the Cubs conversation and go out to the hotline. Welcome in right now from our sister station, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, host of the Starkey and Mueller Show. It is none other than Chris Mueller himself. What's going on, Mules?
Oh, man, I just got done, you know, talking about and watching another scintillating Chris Archer performance so far. He's just been underwhelming, to say the least. But no, guys, we're talking about a four-game series that I think is going to be, because Pirates fans can't stand the Cubs, can't stand Joe Maddon. I would probably put myself in both camps. They grate on me with their success and superiority. This is going to be the Cubs putting the Pirates in a body bag here, I think, in four games, because things are not good in Bucco land right now.
All right, there's a lot to digest just from all of that. We'll get on the Maddon and the Cubs frustrations, I guess, as Pirates observers and Pirates fans that you guys are. But what's wrong with the Buccos? They started off red hot. They got cold. They looked like they were turning the corner before the All-Star break, and then they trade for Archer, and they just drop in the standings.
I honestly, I only had about an hour and a half to go on the air after our post-game show today, and I said, is it possible that an 11-game winning streak is the worst thing that could happen to a team? Because I'm starting to think it was. I mean, the whole question was, they traded Gerrit Cole, which is his own separate issue in the offseason, but it seems that they have committed to the idea that with Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco, they can compete with those guys as centerpiece players. And then I'm wondering if Neil Huntington's faith was shaken when they were 42 and 49. He said, hey, this team needs to play better. We're getting real close. This is as far out of it as we've been in a long time at this time of year. We're getting real close to, you know, he's kind of intimating maybe selling off parts. Then they rip off an 11-game winning streak, and it felt like that actually did reshape how people, including maybe the GM, were viewing the team. And I don't know if they're actually that good. I think they're maybe a right now an 80-win team this year if kind of things break their way. And the Chris Archer deal has just been a flop so far. They've generated no momentum from it. People were all happy here. Oh, my God, Neil Huntington finally went all in. He got the biggest name that was available. He parted with top prospects and big-time young talent. And it's just been a total thud. Be like going to college and your buddies are telling you, oh, you've got one class tomorrow. It starts at 10 a.m. Come on out for a Thirsty Thursday with us. And you know you maybe shouldn't do it, but you do. And then 9:40 rolls around and you're regretting it the next morning.
Yeah, you know, it's the Pirates have confused me a couple of times because they actually confused me when they started to break things down a couple of years ago when they were still in the playoff picture. And I think symbolic of that was I believe it was 2016, right, when they traded Mark Melanson and they just sort of waved the white flag, even though they were still kind of
in the picture. They were three games out. They were three games out and they traded him. They got the better, like, I'll give Neil Huntington a little bit of credit there. He got the better player in the deal. Felipe Vasquez has been clearly better. The genesis of most of the frustration in this town. Everybody here knows that the Pirates ran into Superman in 2015 in the wild card game in the form of Jake Arrieta. It was the fact that the team had traded for Jay Happ at that point, who had actually pitched almost as well as Arrieta in the second half. Like, you can go look at Happ's numbers. They're obscene. The ERA was in the 1.7s or whatever. He was fantastic. and he looked like the kind of guy that they would want to control. Big guy, lefty, power arm, downward plane, all this good stuff. And then whoop, gone in free agency. And it seems that they never made a serious push for him. You don't build on to a 98-win team. Your GM at that point, this is 3 years ago, again, uses phrases like 2016 will be a bridge year. And you've got all these people that you told, hey, if you come to the ballpark, you're going to directly impact our ability as a franchise to put more talent on the field. You strip them down a little bit, or you don't add on after all those people have held up their end of the bargain, and there's your original sin, I guess.
Speaking with Chris Muller from the Starkey and Muller program on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. It's Nick Shepkowski, Mark Grody with you tonight on 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Chris Archer, is it that surprising? Because watching him from afar, maybe it's because he was on postseason baseball coverage with ESPN and I think MLB Network the last few years, and the guy's charismatic as hell. He's one of the faces of baseball, I think, even though he plays in played in Tampa where there wasn't much of a crowd. He was very known, however. Was it that surprising, though? Because, God, you go back and look at his numbers in Tampa, and you're like, okay, a year or two, fantastic, but there's a lot of, I guess, a lot that's left to be desired from him with regularity.
I think it was surprising to me. I thought he would come in and pitch well. I thought change in leagues would help. I thought part of his numbers being what they were, and I know it doesn't explain it for last year, really, but this year I thought, well, he's in that meat grinder of a division with those two teams at the top that he's seeing, and his ERA, I think, outside the division, either for this year or for his career, is over a half run lower. So there's maybe the thought that, okay, he's not going to be seeing quite the offensive firepower. The thing with him has been, like today, he struck out seven, didn't walk a batter, and he had some really impressive-looking innings where guys were flailing at his off-speed stuff. He's a two-pitch pitcher. He's a four-seam slider guy. They're trying to get him to throw more in the two-seam vein, some just work that stuff in. I don't know. He's hard to pin down. Is he old? Not really. But is he young? Also not really. A lot of innings on that arm. I guess my thing is, he doesn't have a true third pitch that at this point in his career, if the fastball's not particularly electric or the slider's not biting on a given night, he doesn't have that third pitch to kind of keep guys honest and be able to manipulate them as much as you'd like him to.
All right, let's get into the real anger here. Pittsburgh hates the Cubs. Why?
This one goes back to, first of all, the Cubs are better than the Pirates, and the Pirates are a smaller market team. The Cubs are a huge market team. So Theo goes to the Cubs. Theo's draft picks all seem to hit. Theo's trades all seem to bear fruit. So there's that. The Cub fans who, I mean, I've been to games at Wrigley. I enjoyed the heck out of Wrigley. It was a Boston Red Sox vibe where, oh, you're good now and you're obnoxious. Wonderful. But
ding and ding.
Just like a bunch of sore winners. I mean, they're next to Cardinals fans, and I'm a follower of that Best Fans St. Louis feed, which cracks me up every time, the people that think they invented baseball. They're up there on the insufferability chart. Madden thinks he invented baseball, too. Like, the people here can't stand the sort of obvious put-downs he throws towards the Pirates, like the just slapping them around like their little brother. And here's the genesis of it with him specifically, and this is where I think a lot of the bile comes from, although this particular guy has been revealed, you know, the principal in this incident has been revealed to not exactly be a good dude either, far from it. When Jung Ho Kang got his knee torn up by Chris Coughlin, and Madden has the audacity after the game to say, oh, I think he had plantar fasciitis when his knee is in like 82 pieces, right? And it seems like not only he's making like a little joke or a wisecrack, but he's also suggesting maybe if Jung Ho Kang's foot wasn't planted, he wouldn't have had his knee shredded. People took that, and myself included, and thought, where does this dude get off even making a joke about somebody else's player who's injured? Secondly, if he's blaming the second baseman there for the play happening the way it did, just shut up, dude. That might be your opinion, but it's not your opinion to share publicly.
And we know that Clint Hurdle hates Javier Baez.
Yeah, I don't see. That's where I don't. I check that at the door, man. I think Baez he's one of the guys baseball should be featuring. Like, the problem with the Cubs is Rizzo kind of annoys me, even though I know he's a really good guy. I have no problem or beef with Chris Bryant. And if you could stack my team with 9 Javi Baezes, I'm ready to make one of them learn how to pitch. I'm sure he'd dive into it head first. I'm all about that guy. I think he's great for the game. The baseball IQ is off the charts with him. But, yeah, Clint Hurdle doesn't like him. But you know what? When you're the team that's always in third or fourth place at this point, you don't get to snipe at everybody else's good players. Like, it doesn't matter that Clint Hurdle doesn't like him because Javi Baez has bigger fish to fry, like the playoffs.
Yeah, and some people are trying to make the case for him to be an MVP here, think that Matt Carpenter is starting to have something to say about that, and Nolan Arenado's not going away.
How about the Cardinals, by the way? How about the Cardinals?
What is going on with that?
Hate them?
Oh, like, my God.
You guys have seen the movie Scream, right?
Yes.
So, you know, it's all sort of tongue-in-cheek, self-referential horror cliches. Well, you've got to shoot the bad guy. Always comes back for one last scare, and then, you know, he pops up. They got to shoot him in the head again. The Cardinals keep popping up, though, over and over again. They weren't even trying to win. They fire Matheny, who is that's addition by subtraction. They trade Pham, possibly the same concept in play. And here those – I want to swear on your show, but I'm a radio guy. I know I can't do that. Here they are again, and if I had to bet right now, they'd get one of those 2 wild cards.
Yeah, they're playing extremely well. It's hard for me to, like, go all rogue on the Cardinals and whatnot, because for years and years it was like Jamie Hazelbaker would be created in MLB The Show, I swear, because it's not a real person. He'd come up and he'd hit 25 home runs in the second half of a season, and some of the other guys that they would always just turn into stars. I would say that, like, yeah, that's the damn Cardinals doing their thing and their made-up players being great again. But then when the Cubs come up with David Bode and he does what he's done the last month or so, it's hard for me to throw stones.
A team full of John Dowds, then, is what you're saying.
Right, exactly.
No, how about Bode? I mean, oh, here, do you want to hear something good? So my co-host, Joe Starkey, was in Chicago and last weekend and took in a Cubs game, the Bode game. And, wait for it, left early.
Oof.
Ooh.
That's
he
a tough one.
He got roasted on the show for that.
Well, like, did he have a flight to catch? Did he have super early flight on Monday morning? Like, why leave early?
He had an earlier flight, but at that point, don't you tough it out and just, like, say, I'm watching a high-level baseball game between two pitchers operating at a high level. There's drama. It's Wrigley. It has that sizzle to it. Like, if I'm in his shoes, I'm staying to the end there. On the off chance I see something spectacular, which, of course, he would have.
You know what I would say, though, because we all like to say, yeah, I was at that game. I was at game 7 or whatever the case may be. Have you ever once in your life, both of you guys, ever been impressed with somebody for being at a game?
Impressed with somebody?
I
no,
haven't.
But I can be jealous. But, like, jealous, you can be absolutely be jealous that somebody was there. Do you guys remember when Robert Morris played Kentucky in the NIT and they had the game in Moon Township, Pennsylvania, because Cal's from there and he wanted to do them a solid, basically?
I remember something strange with all of it, yeah.
So, like, that wasn't even a massive upset, because if you went on the Vegas line, Robert Morris is, I think, either a 1-point dog or a 1-point favorite. So if you were going by that, it wasn't a seismic event. I was at courtside. I got to cover that game, and it's the wildest affair I've ever been to. It was nuts. The craziest atmosphere I've ever experienced, and I would hope people would know that I was courtside covering that game and be super, super, like, Eric Cartman, hella jealous of me.
I think it's as impressive as hearing about somebody's fantasy football team, to be honest with you. When I hear somebody talk about the game that they're, it's like, oh, cool, that's awesome. Hopefully people are impressed
thing,
with you.
I'm definitely a card-carrying member of the, oh, your fantasy, oh, that's great, yeah, here, did you print out their stats? Let me flush them down the toilet.
Exactly.
I know. It's like you're interested in yours. You can't wait to look at yours, analyze yours, but it's like the second someone else comes up to you, you're like, oh, should I go after this guy? I don't know. Nor do I give a single damn. Do whatever you want. I don't care.
Listen, if hell is real, my personal hell is going to be people asking me what I think of their trade proposals on a loop. Like, yeah, so I got, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, that third string tight end, that's cool, man. Yeah, no, you definitely need to accept that trade. Oh, yeah. It could be, I could just be given names that don't even make sense. I can't take it when people do that with the fantasy teams. Like, what do you think of this trade in my league?
By the way, Nick, what time do we have our fantasy football guy on tonight?
We have a guy on to give us advice.
Don't care.
We have a guy on to give us advice, Grody. We're not going to ask him to like set our lineups and whatever else. Asking for little tips and some information. Not
going to
run, you know. Oh, who's the third string tight end on the Patriots that might surprise and get 3 touchdowns in Week 12 this year, my friend? Can you dissect that for me? So, yes, at Chris Muller on Twitter is where you can follow him and send him all of your fantasy football questions as we're finding out as this goes on tonight. Make sure you swarm his mentions with that. If the Pirates are really going to have the casket thrown in the ground and dirt thrown on them for the 2018 version of them this summer, this weekend, how do you handicap the rest of the NL, though? Because we look at the Cubs, and it's a team that has the best record and the biggest lead of any division leader in the National League. But, my God, it does not feel like it whatsoever.
They're not – I'll say this. Like, when the Pirates were playing really well, I mean, I'm actually very glad we've avoided the Pirates for the majority of this because that was my goal because they have me bummed out. But when the Pirates are going well, my co-host and I agreed that the Cubs seemed – they had the Terminator kind of aspect to them for a couple years in a row, and you just – they were so good you didn't even think about trying to, like, really beat them. But this year they seemed vulnerable, and they still seem kind of vulnerable. Quintana, I'm not impressed with. I think that's been sort of Archer Light for you guys as far as him just not really living up to the hype. Philly kind of looks interesting, do they not? I'm looking at Philly. I'm still definitely looking at the Cubs. The Cardinals are going to sneak in there, and somebody's going to have to impale them with a railroad spike to get them out of the playoffs. You know who I'm going to – if I had to pick today, even though they're flagging a little bit, and if the playoffs started today, they wouldn't even be in. Can you really count out L.A., like just with what you know they're capable of if things get really rolling? I don't care how banged up they are. There's something about them, man, the devil magic there.
Yeah, as long as – if they get Kenley Jansen back is the one thing, because that's the difference of night and day at the end of a ball game. Assuming health and well-being for him, yes, I think I tend to be with you.
And one more quickie. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say the Cubs this year, because Baez is so much a centerpiece and he's so likable to me and just in every conceivable way. And I would want people to be like as upset as he is when he doesn't do well. That's what Clint Hurdle got mad at him for in the first place. I'll admit this much. I don't like the Cubs, but them going on a deeper run this year for whatever reason wouldn't bother me nearly as much as it would have in past seasons.
When does Mason Rudolph take over as the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers?
That is a great question. I'm tempted.
See, that's
to
better than
never.
The Pirates questions, right?
No, I like the Pirates questions. I'm just filibustering so I don't have to, again, think about how much I'm angry about them. Man, I could almost say never, but I'll give it this. I think Roethlisberger, if he wins one more in the next 2 to 3 years, because I do think he'll play at least that long, I think he might walk away. So I'll say by the 2022 season, Mason Rudolph is the guy.
Are Big Ben's feelings okay now? Has his heart, his broken heart been mended since draft day?
That guy, the least appropriate thing is that he's just from random, like, Western Ohio. He should be from the Twin Cities or from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, because the Midwestern Minnesotan passive aggressiveness with that guy, I can't even comprehend it. He and Todd Haley were the greatest duo. He just destroyed Haley. He'd come on our station every week and just sniping passive aggressively in perpetuity. I actually miss it, but I think his feelings will be okay. And then he'll have a bunch of great games, and then he'll start shaking his arm that his elbow hurts. He's, you know, cover him and flex all 454 and let him go to work, I suppose.
Yeah, get his walking boot out. I mean, it's only three or four weeks before that comes out.
Still play a clip of Bill Cowher saying Ben does not have broken toes from like his rookie season. Just an amazing spectacle, that guy.
Chris, we appreciate you taking the time this evening. It was a lot of fun. Going to have to do it again, even if the Bears and Steelers aren't playing. We'll find a way to get you on and on these airwaves and some evening coming up here before too long.
Guys, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, so do I go after Antonio Brown with a first overall pick or lean Le'Veon Bell?
Don't find out later. Care.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Muller, At Chris Muller, PGH on Twitter is where you can find him. He's the afternoon show co-host with Starkey at 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh there. Grody, I knew that you couldn't wait to get some football there. You're throwing the Big Ben, Mason Rudolph questions out. I knew Mr. Football himself, Mark Groats-McGoats, Grody, couldn't wait to get to the old pigskin action.
Yeah, you know me. I just jump into different areas of expertise. I was a baseball expert for 3 years, and now I'm a self-proclaimed football expert. But I'm a little bit surprised. I thought maybe, you know, there'd be Mason Rudolph in, you know, the middle of the season or after this year. But he sounds like he thinks Ben Roethlisberger's got a lot of steam left.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. He's out in Denver covering the Bears and Broncos as they practice against each other throughout the week and then play on Saturday night in the Mile High City. We'll get into some Bears conversation. One of the best players in the entire NFL had mad praise for one Mitch Trubisky today. We'll share that with you coming up and getting some Bears discussion. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Mark Grody with you, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. 729, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szczepkowski, Mark Grody with you on an hour being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. I'm here in downtown Chicago, ready to talk some Bears. Mark Grody is out in Denver covering the Bears. Bears and Broncos joint practices this week, ahead of Saturday's third of five preseason games for the Bears this year. Groats, you were out of practice today. How much of just, is there like a weirdness factor that goes, I've always wanted to see these cross games or cross practices because it's just, I don't know. I remember back to like summer camp way back in high school and it was always hostile. It was always like this hostility is what comes to mind to me. It's like, oh, you're not working to get the guy across from you any better. Like, you kind of get ticked off because it's the summer and you know you can't go full on against them. I don't know. And I feel like every time you flip on SportsCenter or flip on any highlight show or throw on Twitter, you see these things and they end up boiling up into brawls. That's why I joked about it when we were transitioning with Danny Parkins and Dan McNeil earlier. But what is just kind of the vibe as a whole at one of these? Because it just is kind of, I don't know, it's a perfect storm of strangeness and some weird happenings for me, at least from afar.
It's the first time that I have gotten to watch one of these, and it is a little bit strange to have watched as many practices as I have watched with the Bears just going up against each other. And obviously they've played preseason games, so it's not like they've not been able to hit somebody else. But it is interesting to watch them practice with another team. The only a couple things today. Adam Shaheen was flung out of bounds pretty hard, like thrown down to the ground. And they were not doing full tackle today. It was more of the wrap it up, almost two-hand touch kind of thing. Shaheen didn't really react. I mean, he got up. But so that was the hardest hit and the one hit that occurred today where I thought, uh-oh, here we go. Nothing occurred. So, you know, Shaheen's demeanor is not that of come and attack after something like that. But the moments where I was most uncomfortable, and I put that in air quotes, in terms of maybe something is going to break out here or look out, is in the one-on-one drills with the big guys. And the one that I happened to be watching was the Bears offensive line against the Denver defensive line, and those two just having mini fights, you know, throughout the little circuit. And it just felt like a lot of times, like something like that could turn into a fight. It never did. Nothing ever manifested itself in that way. For the most part, the players were all cool. And, you know, in this day and age, obviously a lot of the players definitely know each other. So, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow. But the closest that I saw was Adam Shaheen today, and nothing came of that.
Yeah, just curious about some of that because it's every time DeAndre Hopkins in a fight with the Texans today as they're doing the kind of cross the practices. Forget who the opponent is that they're playing with this week before playing them on Saturday. But it seems like every time one of these things goes on, it happened with the Bears and Patriots a couple years ago up in Foxborough. And it's just like, I'm sitting here waiting for when that report's going to come out tomorrow afternoon of whoever, I guess you don't drop the gloves in football, but whatever the relevant term is for getting in a fight on a football field, I'm just waiting for it to come because it seems like it always does. One thing not about fighting, though, the best maybe defensive player in the league, I don't think I'm overselling Von Miller when I describe him as that. I think that it's a small conversation that he's in, very much a part of. If you're going over the best defensive player in the NFL right now, he's on a very short list. He was asked today about Mitchell Trubisky, and here's how he evaluated the Bears quarterback and what they have with number 10. Von Miller calling Mitch Trubisky great, adds it even a step further, says that he was great last year. Von Miller right in this in regards to what he had to say about the Bears quarterback today?
I think Von Miller was just being nice right there. I think that's Von Miller not wanting to make headlines. I mean, honestly, let's be honest here. Was Mitchell Trubisky great last year? No.
I think if you tear apart some highlights like you can for probably most players in the league, you can see some things that were very nice by him. But by saying that he was like week in and week out this prestigious quarterback and showed you that he has signs of being like a top five or top seven quarterback in this league, if that was available for you to watch with any regularity last year, I sure as hell didn't see it.
No, I mean, I think the potential still exists for Mitchell Trubisky to be great. He is right down that center line of totally and completely undecided yet. I mean, we still haven't seen enough in this preseason. I mean, let's face it. You know, from what I've seen, he had two really good practices where things started to click right before the Cincinnati game. That week where it was like, okay, this is, I mean, he even admitted it, Mitchell Trubisky, that it was kind of the aha moment where it was like, all right, now I'm getting this. And then we see the first stringers go out there in two series, albeit, and not look particularly good. I remember putting the microphone right up to Mitch Trubisky's face after the game, and I asked him exactly what was good. He kind of looked at me cross-eyed, like, what are you talking about? Nothing was good. So there's still ways to go. He has put, you know, like today, he had a very good practice again. I'm particularly impressed with his deep ball and the touch with which he has thrown that ball, and it has helped to have some real weapons around him in Anthony Miller and Allen Robinson, who incidentally we probably should see for the first time in a preseason game this Saturday against the Broncos. But no, I think it's complete hyperbole at this point to call Mitchell Trubisky great. He has not been great yet.
Yeah, and I mean, I hesitate on, like, yes, I think that there's enough that you saw last year. Like, Mitch Trubisky's not going to be one of these guys that's two or three years in the league and flames out and you never hear from again. That's what I'm safe in saying about Trubisky after seeing him last year. Like, these, some of the stances that are taken of, oh my God, he's got all the makings of a franchise quarterback because he can throw the ball deep and, oh my goodness, all of that. Like, all right, pump the brakes a little bit here. Let's see him get it run at least more than two series in this new offense and this new scheme that he's getting the keys to. And before we start throwing out some of that, today, though, Matt Nagy was asked about Trubisky and how Trubisky has continued to kind of throw the deep ball instead of checking down. Nagy's response today, and I'm sure you were there for this and can get more in-depth on it, said, yeah, that's never going to stop, not in this offense. Safe to say it's about 180 degrees different than what we've seen the last 3 years.
Yeah, and Nagy said that. That's not the first time he said that. He said, look, we have to make teams understand that you can't get away with just covering that little intermediate pass, which teams in the past have been able to do, where there really wasn't that threat. The Bears' number one wide receiver last year was Kendall Wright, followed by Josh Bellamy, followed by Tariq Cohen. So while, you know, cheers to those guys, it doesn't exactly put the fear of football in you. And that was certainly the case, you know, last year. So this year there are more weapons. It's more real, but Mitchell Trubisky has a long way to go. And, you know, with what Nagy was saying today as far as throwing the ball downfield, it's do or die as far as Nagy is concerned. He is not going to be dumbing down an offense and going to something where we saw John Fox and Dal Loggins. This is what he's going to do. He is a perfectionist, as Matt Nagy, and trying to make this offense great. And, yeah, you have to be able to do that in this offense.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szepkowski. 312-644-6767 is a telephone number to call if you'd like to ask questions about the Bears, make comments about the Bears. Groats is out there. He's in Denver. If he sounds a little bit different than I do, it's because we're not in the same studio together. It's radio magic. He's from all the way up in the Rocky Mountains. I'm from here in the heart of the Midwest, and we're making a radio show together.
Yeah, we are. And by the way, you brought up the, you know, Von Miller, and as in regards to his being very complimentary of Mitchell Trubisky. Man, Von Miller, and we know he's great. In the one-on-ones against the Bears, he was beating every single guy.
I was going to say, how did that whole thing go?
Yeah. I was like close up for it. I think I watched him two or three times just dart right to the would-be quarterback, beating his man. And Bradley Chubb, the Broncos' number one overall pick, considered one of the best players in the draft, certainly the best, you know, defensive end and or outside linebacker in the draft. That dude is lightning fast as advertised, beating his man a lot as well. And this is what, you know, Matt Nagy was looking forward to. He's like, look, the Bears defense is pretty good too. They're top 10, but this Denver defense is more like top 5. So it's a legitimate test for sure for the Bears offense. Although Trubisky looked good again today.
Yeah, that's by all reports. That's what everyone has kind of said so far. Broncos, I mean, maybe some people on the text line getting on our cases of, yeah, if you had Trevor Siemian and Lynch and all the other quarterback problems that the Broncos have, you'd think that Mitch Trubisky was great as well. Get into plenty more of that. 312-644-6767 as we continue with some Bears discussion. This segment being brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Cats return to Ryan Field after a 10-win campaign last year. Don't miss out on matchups with Notre Dame, Michigan, and more. Season single game tickets on sale now, NUSports.com. Nick Szepkowski, Mark Grody, talking some Bears. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Huh. I expected the Rocky Mountains to be a little rockier than this.
Indeed. When you're driving across the Great Plains and don't see the Rocky Mountains, they don't appear to be that rocky. Are they rocky in person there, Grody? Are they as rocky as you expected them to be? Or was John Denver full of bleep?
Here's what's a real upset so far, Shep. I have not really been close to any mountains. The hotel that I'm staying at is in a business park. It's just a bunch of
office. So the radio
buildings.
Station you're working at right now also is in a business park, then we learned earlier tonight.
Right. It is across the street from the hotel from which I took an Uber to get here and went around the block a few times.
It's signs of pure laziness. I've taken the Uber from here to the train before and felt bad about myself because, like, it's not late at night. I'm just going to take an Uber and save myself some time because I simply don't feel like walking. Taking the Uber across the street to get to work is that's a new record, though. I'm amazed.
Here's what happens. Like, I think other people can relate to this. When you're in a city that you don't know, you're just sort of blind to everything, and you just assume that you're just going to have somebody else direct you everywhere you go. You know, you're going to get in a cab when you need to go places. And I just, like, I covered the practice today. Then I was back in my hotel room doing some Bears work and watching the Cubs game at the same time, getting prepared for this show. And then kind of last second-ish, I was like, all right, I better get out of here. I don't know how far this place is. I don't know if they have a rush hour in Denver. I'm just going to plug in the address. And the Uber driver comes up and he says, you're going to love this, but this place we're going is right across the street here. So, you know, he drops me off and he was kind enough to say, and I don't know if he was serious, and I think he was because he was watching to make sure I got in like a mother or father would.
You'd like flash the light on, like when your friend's parents would drop you off, you'd like flash the light and say, it's okay, I'm home, mom and dad are here. There's no burglars.
He said, you'd need me to wait here for you. I'm like, no, go ahead. Go. I mean, I got 4 hours of radio to do here. So you just keep cooking in your Lexus and doing your one block rides. That would be great. But here's the deal. Ready, Sheppy? On Friday.
You're not here it comes, right?
Yeah, here it comes. The Bears are off on Friday. So I talked to a couple other Bears reporters here. And I know you love seeing pictures of other Bears reporters.
It's my favorite
like
part
that.
Of training camp. Everyone else gets excited because of like the pictures from 10 years ago when Kyle Orton's bringing his guitar into his dorm room in Bourbonnais. The first thing I always look for in the pictures in Bourbonnais, the pictures of the media gatherings at Hallis Hall or on the practice fields at Hallis Hall, the first thing my eyes always look to are the reporters in the back and who's doing what and who looks the most awkward and goofy and out of place and uncomfortable. I love looking at that in those pictures, and I don't really care for the coaches or the players in said pictures.
I'm going to get you a couple good ones tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
At the Broncos.
You know the way to my heart.
Oh, I will. I will tag you, and I will make sure that I get some good random media pictures. But
I'm just upset
Friday,
that your buddy Chris Emma is not out there with you because he is.
Ah, well, he's got to be back in Chicago. Yeah. So, yeah, he's back there, unfortunately, because we did some really good bonding in Bourbonnais, Emma and I. I think we went all out to a TGI Fridays one night, which was awesome.
It's hitting it hard in Kankakee County. That is, man, putting the pedal to the metal and getting work done in Kankakee County when you end up at the TGI Fridays. So what do you make of these next today, tomorrow, Friday off, the Saturday game? Like, what are the ultimate takeaways that can be made from a scrimmage or a couple of joint practice sessions with a team that you become a little bit more familiar with? You got any word from that, whether it's from coaches that have done this before, beat reporters that have been through this whole experience before at the Bears and Patriots a couple years ago? Like, what can actually be taken away when the team packs up and flies back to Chicago on Saturday night?
Here's what I think the good part about it is that when it is the Bears playing against the Bears after a while, not only does – I'm not going to go with the old cliche, they're tired of hitting themselves and they want to hit somebody else. It gets to a point where it gets a little bit too easy. It becomes you know what exactly to expect out of the opponent when it's your own team. The snap count starts to become very familiar to you. It's all just a little bit too comfortable. I think that this takes two teams, and especially the Bears, since it's the Denver Broncos facility, it gets you out of your comfort zone more than anything else at all. I mean, Leonard Floyd talked about that today with a few of us, saying, yeah, it's a little bit, honestly, it felt a little bit strange out there. And he actually used the terminology talking about the snap count and how it's different. And to me, that automatically, well, that's a good thing, because obviously you were getting a little bit too comfortable with what was going on with the Bears snap count. And there's no way during a season that you can anticipate what a snap count is going to be like or what to expect from another team. And when it's just you going up against your own team, you get to know them. It's almost like an unfair advantage that you're not going to have during the regular season. So I think to get out of your comfort zone for a few days is really good. I'm not saying that this is like invaluable and without it they're in trouble, but I think it does mostly good.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szepkowski, 312-644-6767. If you'd like to talk some Bears as they continue their practices in Denver, tomorrow morning is when they will practice against the Broncos again. To have Friday off before Saturday's third preseason game of the year, that being against the Broncos, of course, out in Denver, 312-644-6767. If you would like to talk some Bears tonight, the segment being brought to you by Subway. Show them your app and wet your whistle during Free Drink Fridays. Just head to Subway restaurants every Friday and show them your Subway app for your free 21-ounce drink. Limited time only at participating restaurants. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Nick Szepkowski and Mark Grody here talking some Bears with you tonight ahead of preseason game number 3. Grody's out in Denver. It's been well documented that he is out there. Well, I am here. What has been, I guess, you've been around this team now in terms of training camp and some of the practices up at Halas Hall before hopping on a plane and heading out west. What are your takeaways so far of things you either feel good about, things that you have seen, have heard more about being around this team that make you either feel good if you're a Bears fan or give you legit worry as a Bears fan?
I think that the number one good thing that has stood out to me is the Bears secondary, specifically Prince Amukamara and Kyle Fuller. I would say that those two guys at this point running neck and neck in terms of who I think has been the best player. And maybe if we're counting the actual preseason games, maybe the pick six that Kyle Fuller pulled off against Cincinnati gives him a slight edge at this point. So that's been the most encouraging thing. And me wondering if the Bears are turning towards a very good secondary. And it's just bizarre when you think about it, because, you know, Kyle Fuller was a guy last year who was not even considered a starter, that they felt more comfortable with Marcus Cooper at one point in time last year. So now I'm wondering if they're going to start, if that tandem could be top 5, top 10 in the NFL. So that's been a really good thing. I think one of the easy spots as advertised, you still have to worry about the depth at outside linebacker. You have two good ones, I think, two pros in Leonard Floyd and Sam Acho. And then beyond that, there should be a little bit of concern because Aaron Lynch has barely practiced. He was in baseball cap again today, not out there practicing. I am all about Kylie Fitz, the Bears' sixth-round draft pick, who looks the part. He's probably got just as good of or better speed than anybody on that Bears defense, but he is a rookie. Isaiah Irving is another interesting name who could provide some depth. Kasim Edebali, another guy that's getting a tryout from Boston College. So I think that there is legitimacy in terms of the concern at the outside linebacker spot. As far as the offense is concerned, I mean, it's been really fun watching Anthony Miller. I do wonder what it's like for him if he gets taken out of his comfort zone when the Bears open up the season for real in Green Bay and then a Monday night game against Seattle. We'll see if he maybe comes down to earth just a little bit, but to have those pieces, man, to have him, Anthony Miller, to have Taylor Gabriel, one of the fastest guys in the NFL, and then Allen Robinson, who, by the way, we could see for the first time in a preseason game this week. As a matter of fact, they said today, Matt Nagy said today, that we will see him. So there has been intrigue in the offense, just to kind of sum it up. We don't know what the ceiling is. Obviously, we talked about Mitchell Trubisky. And then the defense, if they can maintain health, they've got a chance to stay in the top 10, maybe even better.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767. Before we take a timeout, Orland Park, Ray has thoughts on these joint practices. What's up tonight, Ray?
Good evening, gentlemen. I love these joint practices. I think it's a great thing. Something you didn't mention is I think that players tend to go a little softer against their own team to avoid injury or to, you know, not show up a guy necessarily as much as you would another teammate another opponent on another team. You know, can someone block Von Miller? That's a nice thing to know if someone can handle him and block him. Or can Kevin White be a starter on the Denver defense versus just, you know, the third-string Bears corners or their own corners who are, you know, wanting him to be healthy, wanting him to play a team? So I really like it. I'm surprised they don't do this more often. I'd love to see this expand and get different teams going different places and just really utilize that kind of skill set, you know, potential of watching who can beat who and open some eyes for some coaches.
Yeah, I appreciate the telephone call there, Ray. I remember when I was a kid, and then I feel like it went away for 15 or 20 years, and I feel like it's become much more of the norm, at least for a couple days towards the end of camp in recent years for most teams in the NFL.
And then you wonder, Shep, if it'll start to decline again just because of what you were talking about earlier, that every time you turn on the TV, there's a fight, and I don't think anybody's been hurt yet, but it's always ugly. And I think that's a nightmare for coaches to see this kind of stuff in this day and age. So I do wonder if because of that we will start to see less and less of it. But it's intriguing. I'll tell you one other thing too about it. Like when this practice first started today, it's overstimulating for a reporter because you don't really know where to go. They've got two fields right next to each other, so it's not like you're having to go very far for anything you want to do, but do you want to watch Mitch Trubisky against the Broncos, number one defense? Oh, but then over here on this field, you have Roquan Smith playing with the second unit against the Broncos' second unit. So, oh, and then over here, there's these one-on-one drills. So it's a little bit stressful at first or angst-ridden, at least from my perspective, to figure out the best place to be and figure out what to watch. So I just kind of eventually calm down. You got to breathe, Shep. You always got to breathe in life and then figure out the best place to be and optimize the time.
Speaking of breathing, is it harder at 50,000 or 5,000 feet at altitude that you're at? Is it as hard as they claim?
I'll tell you this. Yeah, it's not necessarily when I was out on the practice field today, but I did a 30-minute run today, and I was like, I was ready to bail out after I think about 19 minutes. Like it was like that mind over matter thing where I was like, I'm going to do this because I plan on doing a lot of eating on this trip. And, you know, if I'm going to do that, I have to make sure that I work out a lot. But yeah, I was feeling it, man, for sure. Like your whole respiratory system feels a little bit different. And our colleague, Jeff Joniak, who I was keeping an eye on him out of practice, but as he was talking about with Tom Thayer during the last preseason game against Cincinnati, he has, every time he's come here, he, at some point in time, he's got an altitude sickness. So we're keeping an eye on him.
Well, who was the Steeler that when they played the playoff game, he couldn't play because he had, was it the blood condition or heart condition?
Oh, yeah.
Ryan Clark. Was it Ryan Clark? Yeah. And that they ended up losing a playoff game with their safeties getting beat by Tim Tebow. Probably large part they lost that game because their traditional Pro Bowl safety was not allowed to play by doctors and teams and family members' orders because of that. But yeah, that's
before the game started, the Bears and the Bengals, I was on the sideline and I was noticing Bears wide receiver, rookie seventh rounder Javon Wims, and he had a contraption over his face that looked like, have you ever seen, I know you've only seen Jaws, Shep, but there's a movie called Batman that exists.
So
and
wait, is he a character? What is this Batman you speak of?
Well, yeah.
Because after Jaws was released and I was born a good decade plus later still, and it was introduced to me in third grade, and I realized this is the greatest movie ever and it can never be matched, let alone topped. There's no point in watching any other movie. We need a full report on what actually happens in Batman.
Well, you know, actually the guy that regularly hosts this show that we're hosting tonight, Lawrence Holmes, he probably would do a better job at explaining to you exactly who Batman is. But there's this supervillain, they call him supervillains, whose name is Bane. And you'd have to look him up, and he wears this, like, mask. That's his thing. It almost looks like an oxygen mask. And that's exactly what Javon Wims was wearing. He looked like a Batman supervillain. He looked like Bane out there. And I was like, what is that? And so I went and asked him, and he said that it was a training mask, a high-altitude training mask. And he's been wearing it all along just so he was ready for this week here in Denver.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szepkowski. He's describing the mask that looks like that of Bane. It just reminds me of
Bane.
Yes, my bad. It reminds.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.